Hi, I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and this is The Front Porch. I'm joined today by Lori Lynn. She's a columnist with the Charleston Daily Mail. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Scott.
And Rick Wilson from the American Friends Service Committee. And today we talk about taxes. There's a big debate going on in West Virginia right now. The legislature is meeting and having a special commission meet throughout the year to determine how to restructure our tax system. Now, let's start with the history here. Recent history is that West Virginia has cut some corporate tax rates, rates on business, over the last few years. They've eliminated what's called the business franchise tax. They've lowered the corporate net income tax to a rate that's pretty comparable to surrounding states. And the question is, was it worth it?
Overall, though, I think the results have been underwhelming. I think there are about 39,000 fewer jobs in the state now than there were when this was enacted. One thing that I think does drive me crazy is that at the Capitol this year, the last several years, when they've been cutting programs for battered women, or when they've tried to cut funding for child advocacy centers for kids who've been sexually abused or victims of crimes, to say it's a tough budget year, when it's a tough budget year because people have taken hundreds of millions of dollars out of the state budget. So it's a question of priorities. And I think the last results were kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to say, because you have to think, well, what would have happened if we hadn't cut these taxes? If our state budget had completely cratered, like, for example, Kansas is the example that everyone uses, where they cut their taxes and they had horrible, horrible budget problems, you can look at that and say, well, yeah, they definitely went too far. But our budget has been ticking along. We've been able to keep it balanced. So, you know, I think the jury is still out, but I don't think it was a terrible idea, and it certainly hasn't caused a budget crisis.
Overall, I think, you know, state taxes are a small part of the overall cost of doing business. Someone at the legislature yesterday said something that really cracked me up, but if you take away everything else, then, you know, the taxes are a big factor. And it's like, well, yeah, if you take away the body, the torso, the arms, the legs, and the heads, then the pinky is really a big deal.
My understanding is that when a business is looking at expanding, locating in a place, they look at several things before taxes: education of the workforce, infrastructure. Taxes is several places down the list. Lori, why do you think we keep coming back to taxes at the legislature as an issue that we keep returning to?
Well, it's something that a lot of important people care a lot about. You know, if you're a coal company, it is a big percentage of your budget, right? Lobbying a legislature is an excellent way to reduce a very big cost. If you can get that tax number down, then that is a great way to improve your bottom line. So, and it's something that obviously the legislature controls, right? Taxes are completely controlled by the legislature. So, you know, it's not shocking that this is something that they want to focus on.
Is it fair to say that we keep dealing with taxes because taxes can be dealt with, whereas there's a feeling that things like education are so huge, it's difficult for legislators to even get their minds around it?
Yeah, I think it seems like it's something, it's a tool, something you have control over, but there's that saying, if all you have is a hammer, then all your problems are going to look like nails.
Senate President Bill Cole floated the idea of eliminating the income tax in West Virginia. Would that be a good idea? Why or why not?
Obviously, there are states that don't have income tax, right? They make up that money in other ways, mainly property taxes and sales taxes, both of which are fairly low here. So it's a trade-off. You're going to have to make up that revenue somehow. I know in Florida, they don't have a personal income tax, and it's a draw for people to move to Florida, right? You retire, you move to Florida, they don't have an income tax. It's an incentive to get people to move there.
You know, Florida, I have personal experience with. Yeah. I haven't lived there. And boy, was that nice. I will say, though, they have a couple of things that helped them out a lot. Florida has a very sophisticated system for squeezing money out of people who come there for vacation.
Mm-hmm.
You go there, there's a relatively high sales tax, there's really high hotel and motel taxes, and they get a lot of money out of the millions of people that visit every year.
Mm-hmm. And it works well because they do have millions of people. Obviously, tourism is a huge thing in Florida, less so here.
And then you pay really big fees to go into the state parks.
Rental cars.
Yeah, and there are fees all over the place. So they get their money somehow, but that top line thing, that advertisement, no income tax, boy, that is a draw. So, Rick, we should get rid of the income tax, right?
Well, you know, if you look at different kind of taxes, some are more progressive and some are more regressive. A regressive tax is one that hits low-income people hardest. So sales taxes tend to be fairly regressive. Property taxes, except for the homestead exemption, things like that, tend to be regressive. Income taxes are actually progressive relative because they're based on your income. And I'd like to quote from Adam Smith, who is not generally known, regarded to be a Bolshevik, who said, "It is not very unreasonable that the rich should contribute to the public expense, not only in proportion to their revenue, but something more than in that proportion."
What do you think of sin taxes, Rick, which also tend to be regressive, like taxes on tobacco, gambling?
In that case, there's kind of a benefit principle. I would support, I think there's a good reason to make the case for increasing the tax on tobacco, because illnesses related to tobacco, chronic diseases, are a huge public expense. They cost the state millions of dollars in Medicaid and Medicare programs and things. It's almost like, you know, if you drive your car a lot, you pay more gasoline taxes. It's a benefits principle. So I think
Should we tax sugar?
You know, firstly, I would be down with a tax on soft drinks. Yep. I mean, my Teamster buddies who deliver it will just go through the roof when they hear this, but I would be down with that. If you look at social costs and things associated with it, besides, like, a lot of those have neither caffeine nor alcohol in them, so what's the point of drinking them? You know what I'm saying?
But they are undeniably regressive. I mean, poor people pay them in a greater percentage than
right.
wealthy people.
Right, but I think there are cases where, you know, the benefit principle holds up.
Some of the other things that are being floated out there right now include eliminating the tax on business equipment and inventory. Businesses in most other states surrounding West Virginia do not pay this tax, and it's cited often by the business community as something that makes us stand out in a not good way.
Mm-hmm. In mining and manufacturing, where you have a lot of equipment, apparently, you know, you're paying a tax every year on this equipment. So it does seem like the business community is focusing heavily on that and wanting that to come down.
I think what Cal Kent was saying from Marshall University, who spoke to the legislature about this, I think he was saying that in general, businesses pay a higher level of property taxes when you figure in both real estate and
the equipment
and other things. I think that's what he was saying. And one of the questions is, how do you replace 19% of income tax comes from this business equipment inventory tax? How would you replace that money? Is getting rid of that worth, say, either cutting services or raising taxes someplace else to make up for it?
Most of that goes to counties and schools is the other thing. It's a matter of choices. What are your priorities? I do think that real property tends to be lower in West Virginia compared to other states, so it's kind of a wash. And as other taxes have gone down, I think things have kind of equaled out here. And again, these are deductible on your federal income tax.
It must be said that West Virginia, going back to the Depression when this was changed, has some of the lowest property taxes on your personally owned real estate in the country. Mm-hmm. It's definitely in the bottom five or so. And mm-hmm. so I don't think West Virginians really realize that.
We also have low property values, too. So when you add the low values with the low rates, people aren't paying really that much.
And that is traditionally where schools get their funding from. In West Virginia, on the other hand, it's not local property taxes that pay the most for schools. It's actually the state of West Virginia is doing most of the funding for school districts.
And this was because of a constitutional amendment that happened back in the 1930s that limited the amount and the ability of local governments to collect taxes. And so when that happened, that's one reason why West Virginia looks odd compared to other states, where they collect a lot more revenue at the city and county level than at the state level. So one effect of that tax limitation amendment was it tended to put the onus of this on the state.
Rick, do you think we should expand the earned income tax credit?
I think that's a good idea. One of the problems that drags down West Virginia statistically is we have a really low workforce participation rate. So anything that encourages and rewards work would be good. You know, and then the EITC is a really effective federal program. Milton Friedman loved it. Ronald
yep.
Reagan loved it. I mean, it
rewards people for working. Yep. It's hard to argue against it. It is, from what I understand, very susceptible to fraud, which is troubling and unfortunate. And I think we need to get a better handle on that. But yeah, no, I can't argue against the EITC.
So if we wanted to eliminate this tax on business equipment and inventory or expand the earned income tax credit, the money has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
One proposal would be to expand the state business tax, which right now is mainly on products and goods, and expand it to services, everything from haircuts to lawyers' fees.
That's not a terrible idea. You have to look at who is going to be affected by that, namely the lawyers and the haircutters. you know, people who mow your lawn, anybody who provides services, and we're increasingly a service-based economy. So the incidence of that tax, meaning who pays it, it's not only going to fall on the customers, it's also going to fall somewhat on the providers.
They'll have to collect it, which is there's a cost to
that,
too.
Yeah, there's an administrative burden there as well.
Rick, what do you think?
I'm not generally opposed to it. I don't think it would have to be evaluated. Less and less of our economy is made of things you can drop on your foot. So the other side of it that I would think we should look at is where they go and what it means in the life of a typical person in this state. The biggest chunk of taxes has gone to K-12 education. It used to be about 10% goes to higher education. We have the lowest educational attainment rate. We really need to boost access to higher education, including vocational ed and things like that. We need a good infrastructure to travel on. We need quality of life. I think, in just looking at myself as a native, I went to public schools in Cabell County, West Virginia, where me learned to talk pretty, right? You know, benefited from that. My kids, my grandson goes to public schools here. I was able to go to college and university here, you know, thanks in part to state support. I travel on public roads. I vacation. I'm wearing a T-shirt from the Gristmill Grinder Half Marathon at Babcock State Park, where I vacationed last summer. I'm abusing about 3 or 4 public libraries, even as we speak. So, I mean, there are huge, these things actually affect the quality of life. So let's think about where they go and what do you want to sacrifice. Is it really important to give tax breaks to some out-of-state corporation at the expense of doing early childhood education? Let's just, I don't want to be dogmatic about anything. I just like count the cost, to go back to another biblical reference of the week. Count the cost and see what you're not doing if you go that way.
When you ask Scott where we would get this money, I think the legislature is going to do this, is look at all the exemptions and deductions that we have and credits in our system. So it's one thing to say we're going to have a rate of 20%. But then if you're exempting all kinds of income from that, well, you're not really getting 20%. So I would look to, and you know, apologies to Rick for bringing up the name, but I would look to what Ronald Reagan did with the 1986 tax reform, which was lowered the rates, but broadened the base. And by the base, I don't just mean the people that were paying. I mean the amount that people were paying. So if you look at your income tax, you have a certain level of income, but you deduct from that. The mortgage interest deduction, for example, takes out a bunch of your income and says, you're not paying tax on that. So what I would do in my ideal tax world is have a low rate, but have very, very few exemptions, exclusions, and deductions. I hope that that's what the legislature is doing. Unfortunately, they have every incentive not to do that, because when you say the words tax reform, it's like, you know, a dog whistle to every lobbyist in the state to descend on Charleston and argue for their special credit. So it's always a battle.
I have an Adam Smith quote to go along.
So I say Reagan and you say Adam Smith. This is great.
Actually, Reagan had his moments. I concede that. But Adam Smith said, people of the same trade seldom meet together, even for merriment or diversion, but the conversation tends into conspiracy against the public or in some contrivance to raise prices. Good thing that never happened at the Capitol, huh, guys?
That's right.
I would agree that we need to look at the tax expenditure side. That's revenues that we do forego. I know, you know, the classic case is the super tax credits that were created, I think, back in the 80s. We were trying to lure a Saturn plant here and wound up just giving away hundreds of millions of dollars, often to firms that eliminated jobs by automation.
I'll point to one that we did this session, and Secretary Tenet pushed a bill that exempts former military from their business license tax that they paid to the Secretary of State's office. Not the entire amount, but I think it's a $50 credit for the first 4 years. So it's a potential savings for these military, ex-military people of $200, which, you know, it's something. I think it's largely pretty symbolic. And I don't mean to pick on Secretary Tenet, but what you did there was you set up a special provision of the tax code. This is going to have to be administered by somebody. There's going to be paperwork at the state, for the state and for the people who are claiming it. Maybe we should have just lowered the rate for everybody by a couple bucks. That would have been simpler. You know, it wouldn't have been as nice politically. And, you know, again, I don't mean to pick on her. Every single person in the legislature voted for this. So it was a feel-good, happy thing. But when we lard up our tax code with all these little special giveaways, you know, ultimately that costs money.
I think a lot of times legislators on both sides wind up voting for things they really don't like because they think, This is the where the current is right
sure.
now.
Yeah, like, you know, you don't be the one person that votes against giving a tax
break to
veterans.
No one was
going to
vote against that. Exactly.
It's interesting, too, that a lot of this stuff is happening in the tax code now. You know, we did away with the budget digest, and a lot of the sort of outright gifts of money that lawmakers were able to make through the appropriations process is gone. And so I think there's increased pressure to do, you know, special breaks for people through the tax code.
Yep.
Lori, in your understanding what's going on with the Republican side of the legislature and what you're hearing, do you think that that is a bedrock value of this tax reform process that they're undergoing, that they want to make it simpler? And do you think they'll succeed at it?
Yeah, I think people genuinely do want to. The question is, when industry comes during the process and says, hey, we have this credit, it's so important to us, you know, you can't get rid of this credit, they're going to be hearing that times 20. And, you know, it's hard to, what I would encourage them to do, my advice would be stick to your guns. And for every carve out, you know, say, wouldn't it be better to just have a lower rate for everyone?
One more business tax, but a very specific one. West Virginia relies more on the severance tax on natural resources, coal, natural gas, than almost any other state besides Alaska and Wyoming. It's a big chunk of our budget, and yet with the decline in the coal industry, there's been pressure to reduce it.
Well, I don't think reducing or eliminating the severance tax is going to save the coal industry. I do think it's also one of the taxes that are exportable. You're talking about Florida. Florida is able to, you know, tax mostly people out of state, and most of the people who wind up paying the severance tax tend to be largely out of state. If you look at West Virginia, especially southern West Virginia, and think if we'd adequately taxed the extraction of natural resources going back 100 years ago and even saved it and even created a fund, a permanent wealth fund, wouldn't things look a lot differently than they
do North Dakota has, like Alaska has.
Like Alaska has. And also a lot of the money from the severance taxes goes back to the counties, like where coal was produced and where natural gas is produced. And those things have costs. And the other side of the story is coal also costs a lot of money to the state in terms of just in terms of highways, repairing the damage of overweight coal trucks. If you look at the DEP side of it, I mean, there are a whole bunch of costs associated with it as well. So it's not a net wash. So,
yeah, I'd want them to make the case and show me how somebody, coal company, considering, do I put a mine in West Virginia or do I put one in Illinois or Wyoming or Pennsylvania? Exactly how the difference in our severance tax is going to, you know, cause me to want to be in West Virginia. And I'm not sure that they have made that case.
I mean, a lot of this stuff, like the gas is where it is. It's not going anywhere, you know.
Well, right. That's true. It is. It's a different kind of industry from, say, you know, manufacturing, like the P&G plant could have really literally could almost be anywhere. Coal, if they want coal, they're going to have to come and get it where it is.
That's where I think there's a case for the old school kind of conservatism. Again, one of my favorite political thinkers is Edmund Burke, a British parliamentarian who's considered one of the founders of conservatism. In many ways, he was progressive. He supported the American Revolution. He hated the way the British were treating people in India, many other things. But he, looking at the French Revolution, he thought anytime you think you can just wipe the slate clean and start all over, it's probably going to be a real mess. And that society is complicated. Individuals are complicated. You know, obviously, we need to pursue social change, but do it cautiously and crazy. And that would be my best advice to the legislature. Proceed cautiously. Count the cost. Let's please. I think we have agreement not be another Kansas right now where we slash taxes so much that we're suffering at the schools and we're cutting off kids. And
I think they are. I'm not hearing any kind of crazy, you know, burn the thing down and rebuild it from scratch. I suspect that they will go about it pretty cautiously.
All right. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being no change at all and 10 being burn it down and start from scratch, what do you think will emerge from the legislature, Lori?
I would think 3 or 4.
Rick?
Well, just watching the legislature the last session, it seems that Senate President Cole is interested in, you know, reaching compromises, at least on a few issues that came up. So, you know, he doesn't seem to want to be like a Scott Walker, really polarizing figure. So it depends, you know.
They need buy-in from the governor, too.
Right.
You know, they can't just do it unilaterally.
And this really is a conservative governor who's really lived in tax land for a long time. And, you know, I think they want West Virginia not to be an outlier on either end of the spectrum. And I think that's one thing the folks from the tax department said yesterday. They were talking about caution and Let's not go crazy, guys.
We talk about taxes all day. It's fascinating.
I like your conversation about complexity.
Oh,
go ahead.
Another thing about complexity is who benefits from complexity, okay? I'm a former tax lawyer. I paid off my law school loans from complexity.
You mean people coming to you for help?
Yeah, exactly. Tax code had been very simple, you know, people say this, and I don't think we'd ever get there, but if it were something you could fill out on a postcard and turn it in, well, that's going to put a lot of people out of work, namely lawyers, the tax preparation industry. The people who make TurboTax, for example, are perennially opposed to any kind of tax simplification. They actually lobby against it. They won't be lobbying in West Virginia, probably, but on a federal level. And so, you know, complexity in a way is a tax on people, and it ends up being paid by, you know, individuals, and it ends up going to lawyers and tax preparers.
So I have a thought, you know, use a case. And again, the scripture of the week that comes to mind is Jesus said, no one builds a tower without first stopping to count the cost and do it. And just last year, there was this task force that the governor convened to look at early childhood education. There's all this evidence that resources you put into early childhood education, actually family visiting, beginning in pregnancy and going on through the first 2 years, that's a critical window where if things don't happen there, they don't happen at all. They came up with a really good plan for early childhood education, and that is something we could do. Or we could, you know, cut taxes by hundreds of millions of dollars. And Cal Kent several years ago did a study about the benefits of early childhood education, I believe. He said for every dollar, you get back at least $5 in return. So again, it's a question of choices and, you know, which way you want to go. So I think it's always good to keep that in mind.
You've been listening to The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I've been joined by Lori Lynn of the Charleston Daily Mail and Rick Wilson from the American Friends Service Committee. You can find us now on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts, and listen every Friday at 4:50 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.